Well, I'm glad that you got a chance to do some laughing. My talks usually don't involve much laughing. I think I need to work on that. But I never thought too much about how my profession deals with abortion until a certain student came to me, and that experience led me to significant changes in the way that I practice. So I'm going to tell you about her, and I'm going to explain why I object to the way my profession approaches abortion. Kelly was 19. And she had just returned from summer break when she learned that she was pregnant. She had met a boy when she was traveling. One night they had too many drinks. A few weeks later, her period was late, and sure enough, a pregnancy test was positive. Kelly turned to the Planned Parenthood website, where she learned that abortions are very safe procedures, as safe as a tonsillectomy, and many times safer, she read, than giving birth. Emotional problems were rare, and afterwards, most women feel relieved. Kelly wholeheartedly believed in a woman's right to choose, and she made her decision with certainty. She was relieved when the abortion was over, but she also felt sad, guilty, and alone. She had called the boy, and he had been supportive, but the conversation was awkward, and they really didn't have much to say to each other. Telling her parents was out of the question, and friends didn't understand. She couldn't concentrate well, she had trouble sleeping, she began to drink more than usual, and her grades began to fall. She didn't understand what was happening to her, so she came to the counseling center, wondering if medication might help. This was happening during the days after Hurricane Katrina, which was a very destructive and catastrophic natural disaster that occurred in 2005. And I noticed the contrast between, on the one hand, the frenzy in the mental health profession to help the hurricane victims, and on the other hand, the lack of organized support for women like Kelly. For example, there was frequent public discussion about the anticipated psychological fallout from the hurricane. We were urged, as a mental health person, we were all urged to be on the lookout for stress reactions, shock, anxiety, irritability, and insomnia. Therapists were reminded of the importance of early diagnosis and treatment. What I found interesting was that this information campaign wasn't targeted only at the survivors of the hurricane. For example, the American Psychological Association reached out to everyone. They warned on their website that images of the catastrophe, even when viewed far away, may cause feelings of vulnerability. On my campus, students were advised, quote, "You may not have experienced this disaster firsthand, but you may still be feeling frustrated, angry, and helpless because of it." And they were invited, students were invited to a series of meetings about Katrina where they could work through their feelings. Now, mind you, this campus was in Los Angeles, and the actual hurricane was in New Orleans. So that's about, like, from here to far. It's a few hours' flight. So it seemed like following this natural disaster, my colleagues were determined to find each and every individual experiencing even the slightest distress and to reassure them, your reactions are normal. Your tears, your insomnia are expected. You're not alone. Here are tips that will help you get through the days ahead. Here are numbers that you can call and a website you can visit And here, if this and this and this happens to you, then you need to speak to a professional. And to the credit of many government and social service organizations, it seemed like they wouldn't stop until the job was done. And that's the way it should be. Because following a disastrous event like a hurricane or a 9/11, we can't say precisely who will cope well and who won't. So what we do is we alert everyone, just in case, so they'll know what to look for and where to go for help. It makes sense, right? Another thing we do in my profession is we screen every patient when they first appear for an evaluation. We always consider the possibility of trauma or abuse in the patient's past. Even if she comes in for ADD or internet addiction, it makes no difference. We're supposed to ask, have you been through any major trauma? Were you or anyone in your family the victim of sexual, physical, or emotional abuse? And we do this because many people won't say unless they're specifically asked. And if we miss this portion of her history, it's considered a major oversight. Now, here's what I don't understand. There are over 1 million abortions in the United States each year, and 52% of them are in women under 25. Most women having early abortions don't seem to have lasting emotional difficulties, but many do. Even a study quoted by Planned Parenthood indicated that after 2 years, 28% of women reported more harm from the abortion than benefit, 19% would not make the same decision under the same circumstances, and 20% were depressed. 1% had post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. The study also reported that a younger age predicted a more negative response to an induced abortion, and that with the passing of time, sadness and regret increased, and decision satisfaction decreased. That is, more women reported sadness and regret 2 years following an abortion than 1 month after the event. Now, I don't know if Kelly will end up with long-term sadness or regret, but one question I have is, why is there an assumption that she's going to be fine? Why was Kelly sent home from Planned Parenthood with information on what to do in case of fever or bleeding, but without a number to call or a group to join if she is distressed? And why, if she is seen in the future by a therapist or a counselor, will she surely be asked whether she was ever beaten or molested, but not necessarily be asked if she has ever been pregnant? Let's say for the sake of argument that we look only at the 1% of women who following an abortion have post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, which is a serious psychiatric disorder that can be disabling. With over 1 million abortions annually, that's more than 10,000 women a year. And since abortion was legalized in 1973, that's nearly 500,000 women in the United States who may have PTSD related to an abortion. And mind you, I'm not counting the much larger percentages of people who report regret and sadness. Where are these women? As a psychiatrist, especially a female campus psychiatrist, why don't I hear about them? My professional organizations make sure that I'm sensitized to other women's issues, such as discrimination, sexual harassment, date rape, but I haven't heard about this group. Where are they? I discovered a remarkable website called afterabortion.com, and many of my questions were answered. The site is a neutral place for women to communicate with each other after an abortion. Women from all over the world are on this site, and they've created a virtual community of validation, support, and care. You can always come to this site, one member tells another, because we are all in different time zones. So when you need to talk, there's almost always someone somewhere available. regardless of whether your abortion was 3 weeks ago, 3 years ago, or 30 years ago, you can find other women who understand. It's a busy place. There are almost 90,000 threads, over 600,000 posts, and 1,000 new posts are added every day. Many of the members are high school girls or women in college. There are chat rooms, there are online recovery groups. It's like a 24-hour hotline or a never-ending group therapy session. One of their rules is no discussion about politics or morality. Entering this site as a guest was one of the most eye-opening and distressing experiences in my life as a doctor. It was horrifying to read, but I couldn't stop. So many people writing about their anguish and regret, describing hideous flashbacks and nightmares. I was struck by the way many women had named their babies and provided the date of termination along with the due date. I can't forget the ghastly descriptions of chemical abortions taking place at home, in which a woman was shocked to see a tiny fetus in the tissues that they passed, and they didn't know what to do with it. There is one board on the site that provides a glimpse into the agony that an ordinary day can bring to these girls and women. Here's a list of some common things that remind them of what they wish they could forget. Maternity stores, baby clothing, strollers and cribs, kittens, puppies, a pregnant friend, a child calling mommy, the abortion date, the due date, Mother's Day, seeing a happy family, seeing a playground filled with children, biology class, a museum exhibit, a pro-life bumper sticker, the sound of a vacuum cleaner. On a positive note, there's an international sisterhood here. There's always someone there 24/7 to listen, to share experiences, and to offer advice. But I can tell you as a psychiatrist that there are people on that site with textbook cases of PTSD. They need to be on medication and under professional care. And some people on that site are suicidal and they need to be in the hospital. My profession says that these women don't exist. An article by a vice president of the American Psychiatric Association is called "The Myth of the Abortion Trauma Syndrome." The first sentence reads, "This is an article about a medical syndrome that does not exist." Planned Parenthood considers symptoms of trauma following abortion to be a non-existent phenomenon circulated by anti-family planning extremists. The entrenched dogma in the health profession is abortion is usually psychologically benign. Well, that may or may not be so, but the majority of victims of natural disasters end up coping well also. But we would never dismiss the minority who don't. It's disturbing to me that the women on afterabortion.com are neglected by mainstream mental health and that they have nowhere to turn but a website. I am alarmed that girls and women being prepared for abortions are left unaware of the possible scenarios in front of them. It's fine to reassure them that the majority will do okay, but since when in medicine do we omit giving a heads up regarding worst case scenarios, even if they're unusual? When I prescribe a medication and there's a 1 in 1,000 chance of causing a dangerous rash, my patient has to be made aware of that risk. It's a matter of informed consent. I remind you that most of the 1.3 million abortions performed in the U.S. each year are on single women under the age of 25. It's bad enough that we have no campus outreach to them, like we do for victims of abuse or date rape. What's worse is that when one of these women does walk through our doors into the counseling center for help with depression or an eating disorder or insomnia, we don't routinely ask, have you ever been pregnant? And we're satisfied to assume that her symptoms are due to other things like school, finances, conflict with parents, or a boyfriend. The woman herself may not know or want to know the source of her pain. She may genuinely believe that her symptoms came out of nowhere. Didn't everyone say that following the abortion she'll feel relieved, that the sadness will be short-lived, and that there are essentially no long-lasting effects? If there are others like her, where are the posters and flyers on campus affirming their feelings and listing times and locations of support groups? And finally, if she sought help at the counseling center and the professional with a degree on the wall doesn't even ask her about it, this supports her denial. My abortion isn't related to my crying spells, my insomnia, my falling grades, right? Nearly every medical, mental health, and women's organization denies that abortion has caused significant trauma to some women. This is due, I believe, to political correctness. Trauma, the word trauma, is a word that's reserved for victims of child abuse, domestic violence, and rape. Those things automatically place a woman at risk for a psychiatric disorder. And so we leave no stone unturned in our quest to identify and help these people. But abortion isn't supposed to be like abuse or rape. Abortion is about choice. It's about control over your body. It's about reproductive freedom. If there are people who suffer following an abortion, if there are girls and women and men, that's a subject for another time, but there are certainly men who have been traumatized by an abortion. But if there are these people who develop psychiatric conditions and need professional help, and maybe even commit suicide, well then, maybe sometimes abortion is more complicated than we thought. Maybe sometimes abortion is not only about choice and reproductive freedom. So while everyone is bewildered at the mental health crisis on our campuses, no one voice suggests that perhaps the aftermath of abortion contributes to the staggering statistics. And what I mean by that is that on our campuses we have very high rates of depression. 10% of students say that they have been so depressed in the past few weeks or month that they were unable to get out of bed. And that's a very significant statistic. We have suicides, and we have our campus health centers are crowded and packed with students that are waiting to get in because they are in distress. So no one is suggesting that perhaps abortion may contribute to the problems, the mental health problems of college students. I see no attention given to this topic by the American College Health Association, and I can't find anything about it on a website created by the American Psychiatric Association that's focused on college mental health issues. Our culture is stuck in a rigid, polarized view of abortion and its aftermath. It's either right without victims or fallout, or it's wrong. It's either constitutional or it's unconstitutional. This works at church or in court, but in my line of business, in dealing with the emotional lives of people, people are more complicated than that. And psychotherapists are supposed to know that. The inner life of a person is a tangle of wounds and fears, longings and dreams. A pregnancy is a new, enormous relationship, even if it's a potential one. I could now be a mother. I could now be a father. And an abortion is the decision to end that relationship, that possibility of the relationship. These are very profound and complex issues. To suggest that pregnancy and abortion do not touch essential parts of us is to deny our depth and our sensitivity, and to diminish the awe and the magnitude of creating a child. To compare an abortion with a tonsillectomy as a procedure that you go in for and then you take an aspirin and get on with your life is a hideous defamation of all of us. Only when politics and ideology are removed from this debate can the needs of post-abortion women and men surface and be acknowledged. What appears to be two contradictory truths can be grasped without one denying the legitimacy of the other. The same abortion may bring relief and lasting pain. The decision that seems best at age 19 may be perceived as tragic when a woman starts her family or reaches menopause. It is our job in psychology to provide a neutral place of healing. How can we do that when the profession is aligned ideologically with one side and makes pronouncements like abortion is for the most part benign? How will patients see therapists as neutral when even our definition of trauma and horror must be politically correct? One can only imagine how it feels for a woman who is harrowed by flashbacks of seeing fetal parts to learn that mental health experts consider her experience non-existent. There are so many women who are suffering out there, and the politics of abortion are standing in the way of their healing. That must change. Regardless of where we stand in this debate, we cannot make assumptions about our patients. Our job as therapists is to ask and listen. Let all those people who have had abortions come and tell us what the experience has been like for them. I call on my colleagues in mental health to scrutinize our current approach and to do some self-examination and soul-searching. Every victim of trauma deserves our acknowledgement and care. We have to stand up and say, for some women, abortion leaves an open wound, and for some men. Pro-choice, pro-life, that's not the point. Let's find these women and men and take care of them. Thank you. There are actually a few slides that were made, and they come from, this is from Wellington Hospital, and was it their website? Oh, they pass it out. It's in a pamphlet. And what you can see here, there's a few slides that I'll show you, is the tremendous effort of bending over backward so that people coming in and having to decide about an abortion will feel better about it. Women know when the choice of abortion can prevent the harsh consequences of bringing a child into the world when we are not ready or able to do our child justice. Women know we act out of compassion when we wait to have a child until the time when we can give it the kind of life every child deserves. Women know we act out of love when we consider what we would be taking away from the children we already have if we brought another child into our family now. And women know that we take care of our spiritual well-being, trusting our faith to provide infinite love complete understanding, unlimited forgiveness, boundless compassion. Now, I can see why they do this, but if I were someone about to make this decision, and this influenced me, this pamphlet influenced me to go ahead with the decision, I'm not sure that years later, or even days later, I might regret that I had read that pamphlet and that it had swayed me in one way or the other. And if we're going to have pamphlets like this, well then, let's have pamphlets from all the people that decided to have their babies, and now those children are their lives. So thank you so much.